We're doing the Sefer HaMidot, and we're up to the second chapter of the Shaar HaDat. The Magid Miduvna had explained that our nature drives us only to things that are physical. Our nature does not drive us to things that are spiritual. A person won't wake up in the morning feeling hungry because he hasn't learned Torah today. And then he said that the nature doesn't drive us to things that are spiritual, doesn't drive us to the positive in spiritual areas, but nature does drive us for the physical and to the physical in excess, which is harmful to the spiritual. So he said the nature of a person is attracted to the things that the Torah says are most disgraceful because our nature does drive us, it just doesn't drive us to the right things. Nature is important because without it you wouldn't eat, you wouldn't sleep, you wouldn't do all the things you have to do. But we have to know that we cannot rely on our nature to be the drive to do things that are spiritually correct. Yes?
Does that mean that if you do wake up with a strong feeling to daven and et cetera, it's actually coming from that place?
No, but it's not coming. We said there are three forces that drive us to action. One is our nature, two is our habit, and three is our intellect. So we have to know that our drive to learn is not going to come from the drive in life called our natural drive. It might be from the drive that's our intellectual drive. Maybe it's from a spiritual drive that we have to discuss where that stems from. But it's not from our natural drive. The natural drive is for the physical. That's all. We're discussing one aspect of drive in life. And in my opinion, this is an explicit sentence by the wise man, the chosen wise man, may peace be upon him. It says in Ecclesiastes and Koheles, "V'reiti ani sheyesh yitron lachochma min hasichlut," and I recognized that there is an advantage of wisdom over foolishness, "kiton ha'o min hachoshech," like the advantage of light over darkness. The wise man has his eyes in his head, whereas the fool walks in the dark. That's what Shlomo HaMelech said. HaMelech HaChacham Alav HaShalom, the wise king, may peace be upon him, Be'al lanu b'chochmato ha-teora, explained to us in his pure wisdom, Inyan yakar mod na'ala, a precious, elevated concept. The advantage of wisdom over foolishness is like the advantage of light over darkness. For eyes can only see where there is light, and not what's in the dark. And then he explained, so what's the great advantage of light where the wise man is compared to light? Mahu, what's the advantage? The wise man has eyes in his head. So what do you do with the eyes of your head? He's not talking about the physical sight. He's not talking about looking. He's saying a person thinks to himself, why did God give me eyes in the head and not in any other limb? Why don't I have eyes in my hand? Right? You know, when we were kids, there were always all these different drawings of Martians and they had eyes in different parts of the body, right? They had eyes in their fingers, they had eyes all over, right? So why did God give us eyes in the head? Why is that the way God composed man? He'll recognize that this stems from the wisdom of his creator, so that when you walk, the eyes are on top of the head, you look in front where you're walking, and but you could also turn your head and look back and see what's behind you. Meaning Hashem gave us eyes in the head where we can look forward most of the time as we proceed, but also look back. So when we say wisdom is better than foolishness, like the advantage of light over darkness, for the wise man has eyes in his head, the meaning is the wise man analyzes and asks himself, why did God give me eyes in the head? So that I could look forward and also look back. Ulay mi rodef acharav, who's chasing after him? Remember, he ended the last paragraph and told us that sometimes we have to ask ourselves, who's chasing after me? Why did Yehuda ben Tema tell us to be like a deer? Because the deer always looks back. The deer always checks. Maybe someone's looking, running after me. So too, a person, we said, in his travels in life, in his spiritual journey, has to ask himself, what's driving me? Maybe it's the Yetzer Hara that's chasing me to do what I'm doing now. And he said, just like the deer always looks back while he's running forward, so too the human being, as he advances in life, also has to look back and ask himself, what's the drive that's really driving me to do what I'm doing now? Look over your shoulder and ask yourself, wait a second, why am I really headed in this direction? And that, he says, is the idea that the wise man has eyes in his head. Meaning, the wise man asks himself, why did God give me eyes in the head? The idea is I could look forward as I run. I can see best. The eyes are on top. But I can also look back. I can turn my head back and ask myself, what am I running from? Why am I advancing this direction? What's behind me? That's the way a wise man behaves. He's always asking himself, am I being tricked by my desire? Maybe I think I'm doing this for all the right reasons, but really it's not. Maybe I'm deceiving myself. Maybe there's something else driving me. Rabbi David Feinstein once told me that he thinks this is pshat in a strange conversation that we find between Yaakov and his wives. Yaakov tells his wives, God told us to go to Israel. But first he says, you know, your father's been tricking me and I've been doing my best and God told me to go. So they say, yeah, our father is really wrong and we've got nothing to do with him and look about how he treats us and of course we have no reason to stay here, so do whatever God tells you. What kind of conversation is that? They're all God-fearing people. They give all the logical reasons and then they say God says so. And then the wives give all the logical reasons and then they say, okay, so do what God said. And if you didn't have all the logical reasons, you wouldn't do what God said. But rather, they were being honest. They were saying, we have all the reasons in the world to do what God said so. So we're not going to ignore those reasons and make believe it's our spirit and our spiritual connection. And that's why we say go. We're saying, let's lay the facts on the surface. We know that everything logical points in this direction. And of course, we're God-fearing people and we'll do whatever God says. But we're not going to ignore the fact that our nature would also drive us in this direction. And with that concept, he also answered a difficult Gemara in Brachos. The Gemara brings that Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai asked Rabbi Yoshua, is the evening prayer permissible or obligatory? And he said, it's a good thing, but it's not as obligatory as other mitzvot. And then they brought the question before Rabbi Gamliel, and Rabbi Gamliel said, no, it's obligatory. So Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai said, but Rabbi Yoshua said differently. So he said, wait, they got together in the academy. Rabbi Gamliel was asked the question a second time. Rabbi Gamliel said, it's obligatory. Everyone's silent. No one said a word. Rabbi Gamliel says, does anyone disagree? Rabbi Yoshua says, no, Rabbi, whatever you say. So Rabbi Gamliel says, wait a second, but they just told me you said that it's permitted, that it's not that level of obligation, Ma'ariv, like the other prayers. So Rabbi Yeshua gets up, and he tells him, Yeshua, stand on your feet. He stands up, and he sees Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, and he says, well, if I were alive and he were dead, I could tell you it never happened. But if he's alive and I'm alive, I can't contradict him. What's he saying? He would lie? No, he's saying, I'll tell you the truth. But right now, it's I can't say I'm telling you the truth because I'm such a fine person that I'll tell you the truth because I can't say otherwise. You know, he's sitting right here. So an honest person always lays the card on the table. He doesn't take any spiritual spiritual credit saying I'm doing this because of all the right reasons. He says, I have all the wrong reasons, and there are also the right reasons, and I hope I'm doing it because of the right reasons. He recognizes that there are the wrong reasons driving him as well, which is a very, very powerful concept, guys. You know, most people err in this on some level. Very often I talk to a guy and he tells me he's madly in love with a girl. And when I try to understand why, it's very obvious it's because of her looks. But he doesn't think so. He'll give you all the other reasons. What's going on here? All the other reasons point the other way. What's going on? Okay. We had a couple once that the husband wanted to make aliyah, the wife didn't want to make aliyah. Or at least not at that time in their lives. So again, he came with all the right reasons, right? He gave her all the lingo, the gemaras, the shulchan aruch. But that wasn't why he wanted to make aliyah. Who are you kidding? He liked living in Israel, which is fine. But the concept we're being taught here is that an intelligent person says, wait a second, why did God give me eyes in my head? So that I could look forward, but I could also look back. And I'll always ask myself, wait a second, what's really driving me to do what I'm doing now? That's a tough question. And we like to think that what's driving us is the right reasons. We should learn from Yaakov Avinu, from Rachel Imenu, from Rabbi Yoshua, from the great sages, that they always laid the cards on the table. They said, I have the wrong reasons and I have the right reasons. And I'd like to think it's the right reasons that are driving me, but I will also be honest and say that there are also the wrong reasons that are driving me. Sometimes it's not easy. I told you guys the story that I once had to sell a store, and I was selling it to a friend of mine. So I told him, look, in all honesty, I'm going to try to convince you why it makes sense to buy this store, because I want you to buy this store. But I'm not sure I'm being honest. I want you to check everything I'm saying. I'm going to try to be honest, but I want you to know I'm partial. It's obviously, when you try to sell something, you view it in all the good light, but I'm going to try to tell you the good and the bad and why you should and shouldn't, but at the end of the day, I am partial. As much as I'll try to be honest, I'm not sure I'm doing it justice. So you check it out, check it out beyond what I'm telling you. Lay the cards on the table. People will only appreciate you more for that. Yeah?
Even like some form of self-manipulation. Not even manipulation. The person wishes to have those qualities driving. He wants to believe that. And he wants his life to be according to those ideals. So he will say that it's because of.
But I don't know if we right.
To affect his own self-image, perhaps, or improving that.
I don't think that a decision has to be a product of only one thing. Meaning, let's say when we decide to get up for Shacharis, so part of what's driving us is I don't want my roommate to see me in bed and think I'm a bum. I don't want the rabbi to be there taking attendance. I don't know if they take attendance here. I don't know. Whatever. And think I'm a bum. And I also want to talk to God. They used to once. I don't know if they still do. Let's put this way. I haven't gotten an attendance call in a while. I'm joking. I never daven shacharis here. Unfortunately, I can't. But I think all three components might be true. I want to talk to God, but notice I put that third on the list because I always have to wonder, is that number one, number two, or number three? And I'd like to think that's number one. When in truth, sometimes if we recognize that it isn't, we're already on our way to making it number one. Sometimes we could say it's a component and I'm not yet holding where that's the number one component. It's a component in what I'm doing. It's a good component in what I'm doing. And with time, I hope it'll be the number one component. You see that Rabbi Eliezer, the Tana, whose disciples were Rabbi Akiva, his disciples were very big people. And when he was lying on his deathbed, he said to them, I wish that you fear... Was it Rabbi Eliezer? I don't remember. Maybe it was Rabbi Eliezer the Amora. I don't remember. He said, I wish that you fear. At any rate, it was a big rabbi with big students. I don't remember who it was exactly. It's a Gemara in Brachos. He said, you should fear God like you fear man. So if Tanaim and Amoraim were on that level where their fear of man was bigger than their fear of God, and he had to wish them, his parting wish. They said, bless us, and his blessing was, you should fear God as you fear man. So if we're realistic with ourselves, we don't have to feel bad that this is where we're holding. But at least that way we could recognize what's driving us and we have a better chance at conquering it.
Also, these days it's hard to lay out on the table so honestly. Because most people came in and they think, oh, but that's all they hear. And then they say, but I'll do it anyway. And they think, false, fake.
Yeah, you think so?
A lot of people, but they're definitely, like someone has to be on the level to appreciate what you're doing.
I don't know. I haven't had that experience. I always try to lay things on the table. I try. What?
I try and think
of, I think if you present it fairly, if you say, look, there are a few components here, and you have to recognize that component. There are other components. I can tell you it backfired. You know the story about the girl I was dating who asked me where I'm going to be in 20 years from now, right? And I told her, I don't know if I'm going to be learning Torah. I don't know. I'd like to say I'll be Orthodox, keeping Torah and mitzvos and everything and learning Torah. But it's a challenge. Every day is its own challenge. I'd like to say yes. I'd like to think yes. And she dumped me, right? So I'm saying that's an example of what you mean, that some people can't swallow that type of truth. Right, I guess that's true. What? I don't know. I know her husband. He's a great guy. I'm happy for it. The pasuk concludes and says, the fool walks in darkness. He doesn't see what's in front of him either. Really, he's walking encompassed in his own darkness. I don't know what the Magid Miduvna means in this line about the fool. I understand this line about the wise, but he just says it in passing. I'm not sure what he means about the fool, that he's in darkness. If I take it in context, I assume what he means is that the fool doesn't begin to understand himself. He doesn't realize what's driving him at all. His life is only about reactions to situations and without any self-recognition. But that might be my interpretation, because he doesn't say too much about the fool. He just says he doesn't see, he doesn't even see what's in front of him. Okay? No, I mean, that's what I think he might be, what he might mean to say, but I'm not sure. You know, when he says one sentence, I'm just saying, in light of the interpretation of the beginning of the pasuk, if the two are comparable, then that's how I would interpret the continuation, going with his line of reasoning. But I'm not sure that's what he means to say. And this encompasses what we wrote elsewhere, in explaining the verse that says, you just turn the wicked over and they're gone. If you want to understand the difference between a tzaddik and a rasha, kahivdel is like the difference asher ben asocher anoseh ledarkov and bno anoseh imo letayel. You have the merchant, he's going on a mission. You have his son who's coming for a trip. The merchant is happy every time he's getting closer to his destination. He's one step closer to business. Not, his son is not like that. He's not going for a purpose. He's coming along for the ride. He's enjoying every minute of the scenery and the Alps and everything he's seeing. He doesn't care if you covered a mile or 15 miles. He's not headed anywhere. He's here to enjoy the trip. He gains nothing from them. He's happy if you tell him, you know, we're still going to be camping for another 3 weeks. When you tell him in a day we're getting there, he's not happy. That's the way the tzaddik is. Every day that passes, he's happy with his accomplishment, and he's not focused on how many days stand in front of him. As the verse says, don't believe in yourself till the day you die. The tzaddik knows, if I succeeded today, I'm happy. I don't know if I'll succeed tomorrow. The verse says, when a person can calculate the days that passed and how many mitzvahs and what he's gained in that time, he's happy. If he can't figure out what he's gained in that time, then the tzaddik is worried and he figures out, hey, look at all the time that passed. Look at all the time I wasted. Look at all the time I missed. How am I going to fix that and do better? The wicked, who are always just focused on the worldly, short-lived pleasures, by him, every day that passes is just like, oh boy, I'm only one day older. I feel bad that another day passed. What does he gain from yesterday's steak? Yesterday he had a good steak. What does he have now? Now he's hungry again. The wicked are always looking forward to tomorrow. Looking forward because tomorrow maybe I'll get a better steak. Maybe I'll get a better car. Maybe I'll go on a better vacation. When your life revolves around the physical, you live life in anticipation of what can I have tomorrow. When your life revolves around the spiritual, you live life with a certain contentment with what I accomplished yesterday and today. It's a different life. And that's one of the things that today everyone's saying, that the difficulties with the economy is that the economy was built for the last few decades around people always wanting more pleasure tomorrow. So if I have a good laptop now that's working fine, I'll buy another one because that one's going to be better. And I spent time anticipating, seeing all the commercials, being convinced that my iPhone isn't good enough, my iPod isn't good enough, I've got to get an iPad. I'm constantly looking for the next thrill. So a person whose life revolves around the physical, what he calls the wicked, his focus is always on the future. His focus is on where can I enjoy tomorrow. Whereas a tzaddik is living a life of happiness and contentment with what have I accomplished thus far? Look at the family I've built. Look at the good deeds I've done. Look, I've accomplished. A person ends the day with a feeling of accomplishment, and to an extent he lives with a certain worry. Will I be able to live up to this tomorrow? This is challenging. Ask anyone in the gear process. You have to ask yourself, wait a second, how am I going to live up to this afterwards? You know, I've done it thus far, but you look forward and you like to think, yeah, I'm going to do it. But deep down inside, there's this little fear of, it's not so easy. Am I? Will I? And the truth is that every person who spends time thinking about his responsibilities, to a certain extent, has to ask himself, well, how will I do tomorrow? כמאמר, והכלבים הזה נפש לא ידעו סבא, והם רואים לא ידעו אבין, כולם לדרכם פנו איש לביצעו מקצעיהו. Isaiah says, the dogs are of a wicked soul. They're never satiated. They don't understand. They're guarding, but they don't understand. Each one goes their route. Each one's looking for their plunder. Eitayu ekhayayin minisba shechar. They invite, come, let's grab wine, let's enjoy beer. They say, and tomorrow we'll do even better. So today I made a million, tomorrow I'll make two. Today I drank this wine, tomorrow I'll get a better wine. The focus is, how can I make tomorrow even better? That's why the verse says, the wicked on a turn, they're gone. When the wicked turn back, and they look back at what they've done in life, there's nothing. It's fascinating because there are so many people who came to Machon Meir with this line. They said, you know why I did tshuva? Because I reached the age of 30 or 35 or 40 and I looked back and I said, what have I done in these 40 years? I had steak. One guy once told me, I can tell you I robbed $5 million, you know, and I spent it all. He said to me, I reached one day, I was sitting in the apartment doing drugs, and I finished, and I was getting up from a daze, and I said to myself, is this just the way I'm going to go till I die? So I've already robbed 5 million, spent 5 million. I think the 5 million was a minimization. It sounded like it was that year or that year and a half. It sounded like this was like... That I can't tell. He might be listening to this class. I don't want him to know it's him. There are enough people who have a similar story. He said he sat there and he was ready to go on his next spree of making money. And he sat there thinking and he said to himself, so I'm 35 or 45, however old he was then. And he said, so I'm just going to go to the grave like this? And he started looking back. And he said, what do I have to show for myself in these 35 years of life? And he started crying. And he spent 2 days crying, just thinking what his life had amounted to in all that time. And sitting there in a room alone, you know, he's got his needles next to him. And the continuation of the story is a fascinating continuation of the story, but that's for a different time. In a nutshell, he said, God, if you're out there, talk to me. I want to hear from you. I don't know where to go from here. I know I shouldn't be continuing this route. Tell me where to go from here. And at that moment, the phone rang. And it was an invitation from Chabad. I mean, that's in a nutshell. That's the story. With a few facts, small facts changed, but that's really the story. You know. Okay. The Zeshamar, so that's what he's saying. When the verse says, the wicked on a turn, they're gone. That means when they turn back, they look back. I mean, I can tell you the same story. A couple that's in this neighborhood who did tshuva. They did tshuva because the wife says it this way. She says, you know, we reached a point where we had two kids. We were getting up in the morning, doing diapers, dealing with wailing kids, rushing to make a living. And at some point, you're so wiped, you stop and you look at yourself and you say, there's got to be more to life than this. Staying up at night, just changing diapers, you look at it and you say, wait a second. So for the rest of my life, this is what I'm going to be doing? Changing diapers, bringing up the kids, dealing with their hardships, my hardships, and then what's life about? So that's what I'm saying. You know, this line that a person who spent his life running around the physical will at some point stop and look back and say, hey, there's nothing to look back to. This is a line that people have come to on their own. Umeata yafe amar hachacham alav shalom. So the wise man said beautifully, may he rest in peace. Hachacham inav b'rosho. The wise man has eyes in his head. Valeyot inav b'rosho v'lo be'var acher. Being that he has eyes in his head, not in any other limb. Yavin ki yesh lo labit gam me'achorav. So he understands. I'm supposed to look forward. They're up here, so I can see forward where I'm going. But they're also on a neck, which is perched in a way that I could look back. I can see what's behind me. The concept is look back, see the days that have passed. Ask yourself, am I happy with my past? Before I continue running along this path, that was the point which he reached, why Yehuda ben Tema tells us to be like a deer. The person has to stop and say, well, am I happy with where the path I'm on? The fool walks in darkness because he's only busy with the future. And because of that, because he's always looking forward, he's like walking in the darkness, because he can't anticipate what the future holds for him. And a person who spends his life in anticipation of the future, well, he's bound for disappointment. A person who can look back and say, I have accomplishments, so then every day is a day of contentment. I've accomplished thus far. Now the question is, what will I accomplish tomorrow? I approach tomorrow with an element of trepidation, but also an element of accomplishment. I've done something that thus far. So, and that brings us to the end of the second chapter.